BAI New York. Next up
will be Emmanuel Goldstein, Off the Hook. First a message or two.
Lord, stop by here.
Stop by.
Oh, Lord, oh, Lord. Oh, that's good gospel music for the best in good gospel music. Saturdays, 3:30 p.m. over this station, WBAI 99.5, with your host and legend, Brother Thurman Root.
Who am I? Why am I here?
Let him know what time it is.
Right.
Let him know.
It's time to change.
Sure, we must change. But some values are timeless.
God had put me here to play basketball and to do my thing on the court. And so that's where I'm going to do my thing.
I'm one of the lucky people in the world. I found something I always wanted to do, and I have enjoyed every single minute of it.
By dawn, waterfront homes were flooded, their basements ruined. Signs twisted in the fierce winds, power lines tugged violently on utility poles.
It is announced from Buckingham Palace that with regret, the Prince and Princess of Wales have decided to separate.
If I could change everything, I would. If I could put my hand over a face, I would.
So if you just want Lawrence Welk music, I'm not your man.
Hit the siren, Doug.
Tune in for a shortcut through 1992, New Year's Eve at 11, here on WBAI.
Hey, listen, I'm not so worried about my fear of re-election. I got things I want to do to help people in this country. And I think I'm going to win the election, too.
It might happen. Yeah, and monkeys might fly out of my butt.
Dracula!
Wow, Amy Fisher on WBAI. I never thought I'd hear it. Anyway, it's 10 o'clock at night on this Wednesday night, time for Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. It couldn't get much worse.
And good evening, everybody. This is Off the Hook, the program about technology and how it affects you and how it can hurt you and how you can hurt it, how it can help you and how you can help, well, you know, you get the idea. It's a program about the interesting developments going on today and what's going to happen in the next few years, because a lot is going on now and a lot will continue to go on in the future. And just where we go in this particular voyage is up to us, as it always is. Well, there are new technologies being introduced almost daily, and this week is no exception. There was an article in the paper a couple of days ago about the new enhanced telephones. I don't know if anybody has seen these yet, but in the next year or so, you should be seeing a lot of them. Kind of a combination of computers and telephones, except more like telephones, really. You plug them into your phone and phone jack, and you can get electronic mail, buy all kinds of neat products, and do electronic banking and things like that. According to Newsday, Tuesday's Newsday, actually, after years of hype, a computer disguised as a telephone is finally starting to come to market. The new class of plug-in anywhere telephones equipped with modems that permit text and limited graphics to be captured on a small screen, known as smartphones, screen phones, or enhanced telephones, take your pick, Essentially a bridge between telephones and computers, these new devices allow ordinary telephone service users with no knowledge of computing, no knowledge whatsoever, stupid people like you and me, allows these people to tap into some of the benefits of the information age. And at the same time, these easy-to-use devices might just possibly spur the development of new information services. Says Joshua Harris, president of Jupiter Communications, the phone is the most used consumer electronics device there is, with the exception of the television, of course. The device we're using now is like an AM radio. The screen phone is like a boombox. I wonder if they'll be outlawed on subways. Well, while smartphones have been on the verge of arriving for the past few years, sort of the DAT syndrome, manufacturers are finally beginning to ship them. The first wave of major players is starting to launch their first phones, according to Harris. No idea how much these things are going to cost. It would be kind of neat. You know, actually, the same sort of logic holds for all kinds of new technologies, like picture phones, for instance. You know, they're so expensive now. Someone suggested to me, I forget who it was that suggested this to me, but they said if picture phones were offered at a very, very, very low price, like say $100 for a picture phone, instead of $1,500 or something, what they cost now, well, you flood the market with these things. And yeah, AT&T can take a loss. They can afford it. So you sell all these picture phones for $100, and inside of 2 months, picture phones are everywhere. But that's not the way they do it. They prefer to sell it for a huge amount of money. Only a very select few people will get it. Possibly the technology will fail. Possibly it will never get off the ground. So listen up, AT&T. I think it's a good idea. I think it's something that might not make sense from a business point of view, but from a sociological point of view, I think it's kind of a cool thing to do. Anyway, that's only one form of new technology that is hitting the market. Picture phones is another, finally. Good 30 years after they were demonstrated at the World's Fair in Flushing. Looks like they might finally start selling the things. Well, I can hardly wait. And then, of course, you've got the useful gizmos like this one we were talking about a couple of weeks ago, Gotta Go. Here it is, big spread in the newspaper once again. The perfect gift for phonies. Well, I couldn't have phrased it better myself. I'll read you what it says in Newsday, and you can just sort of figure the rest out for yourself. As if relationships don't breed enough insecurity, now comes Gotta Go, a pint-sized electronic telephone accessory. It perfectly mimics the clicking sound phones generate to alert you of another call in waiting. All in waiting. So, at the push of a button, you no longer have to rack your brain for a lame excuse to get off the phone. Your significant other, talkative telemarketers, or gabby associates will hear what sounds like another call waiting, and, with your devious help, will believe that you have an urgent call on the other line. It's really easy to... People... Oh, I have another story waiting. I'm going to skip this one, then. All right. Let's go over here. I don't think anybody would pay $20 for what I just did, would they? If so, send your checks in here, because I don't know why anybody would pay $20 for that. Speaking of telemarketers, there's this law that was supposed to go into effect on Sunday. It hasn't, because telemarketers have big mouths, and they know when to speak up and don't know when to shut up. But the law has been suspended. I wish it was that easy for us, but the law has been suspended until a lot more money is spent on lawsuits and things like that. But to update you, a handful of small business owners, including a chimney sweep in Oregon, are blocking the Federal Communications Commission from clamping down on the use of recorded telephone sales pitches. A federal law against such calls would have gone into effect on Sunday, but Catherine Moser, who runs the Lucky Leprechaun Chimney Sweep Service of Kaiser, Oregon, very hard to argue with someone like that, and all the other users of various devices persuaded a federal judge to put it on hold. Moser says her small business didn't start to make a profit until she began contacting homeowners with her auto-dialing telephone and recorded message device, for which she paid $1,795. She says no other form of advertising brought her as much business. She is president of the National Association of Telecomputer Operators, which is a plaintiff in the lawsuit. The group claims about 40 members, including carpet cleaners, insurance agents, and pest control companies, ironically enough. U.S. District Court Judge James A. Redden in Oregon told the FCC late Friday that he was delaying enforcement of the statute until the lawsuit is resolved. Moser has argued that the law violates her constitutional rights to free speech and equal protection because it would keep her from using the automated devices but allow companies that can afford employees to do the talking to continue soliciting by phone. We're talking about those things that I'm sure everybody listening has gotten this at some point, where you're just relaxing at home, minding your own business, perhaps composing a poem or something. So, you know, whatever people do late at night or early in the evening. And then you get this this phone call from a recording that says, you know, we have a special sale on this particular product and we're calling to tell you all about it. And, you know, you hang up and you pick up again and it's still there talking to you because it doesn't know that you hung up. It's a machine. And occasionally they collide with your answering machine and the two of them just sort of talk back and forth to each other for a while. Well, I guess the question we're asking is, should that be illegal? Or should we just put up with it? Is it like junk mail, or is it more intrusive than junk mail? And if we do make it illegal, how in the world do we enforce something like that? You know, it seems kind of difficult. It's, I guess, a way of enforcing it. Most people calling you with these sales pitches would want you to know who they are, so if somebody did it, wouldn't be too hard to put the finger on them, but I don't know. It seems like a lot of trouble to go to. Anyway, Ray Kulker, whose company Kulker Systems Incorporated in Carlsbad, California, makes the equipment that Moser uses for her Lucky Leprechaun chimney sweep service, he says his machines are used mostly by small businesses. FCC counsel Jane Magoo said the commission hoped to get a written opinion. Too bad it's not a male. I would love to say Mr. Magoo, but I can't. But anyway, Ms. Magoo said the commission hoped to get a written opinion from the judge so that it could decide the extent to which Redden's order blocks enforcement of the law nationwide. Michael Jacobson, whose Center for the Study of Commercialism lobbied for the new law, said he sympathizes with Moser, but her business success with the machine has to be balanced against people's right to privacy. These junk phone calls are far more intrusive than junk mail. Ronald K.L. Collins, K.L. stands for Night Lightning, I guess, a George Washington University law professor specializing in the First Amendment and commercial speech, said the law was written to avoid constitutional problems. He said, the Supreme Court has never given commercial speech as much protection as political speech, and that mechanical speech, like that on Moser's recorded sales pitches, is way down at the bottom. Nonprofit groups, political pollsters, and special telephone alert systems that notify people about community emergencies would continue to be allowed to use computerized recorded calls. Live phone pitches would be allowed, but would have to stop if the recipient said never to call again. The law would allow recipients of such calls to file a complaint. And they also could make a complaint to the state attorney general and file a lawsuit seeking up to $500. Ooh, in damages, or triple damages if the calls are willful or knowingly in violation of the law. So, how do you deal with junk phone calls? How many junk phone calls do you get? Just one of the many side benefits of computerized technologies and how they relate to phones and things like that. And checking out some other news stories. Okay, how's this one? A new central system is being tested in Denmark for people to call a doctor service at off hours and possibly get a house call for non-emergency cases. This is not the equivalent of 911. The patients in the Danish city of Odense complained loudly that the waiting for a phone call to be answered was too long, while the provider said their computerized logs showed no caller had to wait more than 10 minutes. After many complaints, they tested the equipment, which showed it was not able to register waits longer than 10 minutes. So, yet another computerized problem. Couldn't register a wait longer than 10 minutes. Therefore, they all seemed to be exactly 10 minutes long. That should have tipped you off, you know, that something was wrong right there. But I guess it took some time. Well, let's see what else we can find here. Not too much very interesting happening this week, I don't think, as far as computer foul-ups and things like that. According to the Associated Press, officials in South Korea have decided to use the abacus to tabulate 24 million votes in Friday's presidential elections, which already occurred. The abacus was used to avoid a recurrence of charges in the 1987 presidential race that the computer count was electronically manipulated. The Central Election Management Committee employed about 300 abacus experts to oversee the counting. And the writer comments, it's curious that these people find manual manipulation an unnecessary back formation, since manipulation means movement by hand. It's curious that they find that to be preferable to electronic manipulation. All right, we're going to take phone calls, 212-279-3400, first a brief musical break, and a bit of advice, too, for those of you out there taking it easy, getting a little bit of a rest. Don't be too quick to plow right back into the rat race. Those are the specials here on Off the Hook. Yeah, and those are still the specials, but we're going to fade them down just a little bit because we've got important business to take care of. And the song we heard was Rat Race from their second LP. Yes, our phone number is 212-279-3400. And we're taking phone calls on anything people have as far as new experiments in technology and observations on the passing scene. Things such as automated phone calls. Should they be illegal? Are they an intrusion of your privacy? And whatever else might be in the news these days that we may have missed, there are certainly all kinds of things. So let's open it up to the telephones. Again, 212-279-3400. Good evening.
Hello, Manuel.
How you doing?
I'm glad I got through, because this has been on my mind for quite a while. When you were talking about the privacy issue, you know, about specifically about, you know, hacking, and I mean, from your perspective, I thought of an example that might be, get to the, I mean, something to show that you should have some more respect for privacy. But just listen for a minute. What if you were exploring the property, you know, someone's property, and they were a very apprehensive person, easily startled, and it was evening, you know, and they came out of their home to the top of their stairs.
Sir, can I stop you right here? Because I don't want to get involved in another house analogy. This is pointless. We've been through this 100 times.
They fell down the stairs and injured themselves because you were on their property when they weren't expecting to see anyone.
Yes, but it does not hold up.
Your very presence would have resulted in an injury.
Right, and if I'm logging into people's personal computers and calculators and TV sets and things like that, maybe you'd have a point there, but this is not the case with computer hackers. They're not doing that. They're going into business systems, things with hundreds of users on them, and they're blending into the scenery is what they're doing. That's what they're most guilty of. And I don't think anybody's getting overly startled at their presence. They're getting overly startled at their incompetence in letting them on in the first place.
I take your point is well taken. I just wanted to say that, I think you have to respect people's privacy because they can be harmed. Because you were insisting that, you know, that you're just like you talk about exploring an office building. That you said, well, you're not doing anything. You're just there. You know, and I just wanted to point out that, you know, just being there could result in some kind of mishap.
Well, yeah, and, you know, if you showed up in a very sensitive location in, say, the military, obviously they'd be very upset and maybe disappointed that you were there, but they would be taking some kind of precaution to prevent you from getting there in the first place. They don't leave the gates wide open at that NSA to allow people to walk into the main door and penetrate deep within their buildings. They have something in place, like a security guard, to keep you out. But you don't have the same thing with computer systems. They're wide open, so of course people naturally want to explore them, and I don't think they should be charged with breaking and entering if the door is wide open.
But what if they brought a virus into it? Is that possible by getting access?
Well, I don't think very many people are going to accidentally bring a virus into a computer system.
Could that happen? See, I know practically nothing. I'm asking you.
It's extremely, extremely remotely unlikely.
But what if it did in a very important place? What if that did happen then?
Okay, well, let's be hypothetical. Let's say that somebody was able to get in and somehow, through an accident, cause damage of some sort. Obviously, they should be held accountable for something, but I don't think they should be held accountable for the lack of security, and I think that's the main reason why any kind of damage would take place.
Well,
but I should point out that damage does not occur.
I'm not the most sympathetic entities, but why does everyone have to be worried about who's looking over their shoulder all the time, you see? You should have a bit more respect that you don't like. I mean, you're always talking about, you're worried about all the different erosion of the of privacy in this country, and yet here you make it incumbent on the victim to protect himself against you.
Well, I hardly consider TRW or the military to be victims. If they have these computer systems and they cannot protect them, then they are.
Should they protect?
We
them
are the victims.
If,
you see,
if they're theirs, I mean.
But they're not theirs, they're ours. You see, we entrust these people with data and it concerns us. And if they have it wide open so that some kid in Holland can get into it, you know, I feel like I'm the victim and I should be able to say something about that. Do you understand? And as far as respect for privacy, I think you'll find hackers have more respect for privacy than just about anybody. Hackers are the ones going around telling people to encrypt. And I'll tell you right now, use encryption programs when you're using computer systems, when you're sending electronic mail back and forth. Use a program called PGP. It's very good. Now, why does the government want to stop people from using it? Who has respect for privacy and who wants to be able to look over people's shoulders and read things?
Our government doesn't have respect for privacy.
Okay, I think we're in agreement
all right,
there.
Well, I won't go on. Thank you for hearing me out. I just wanted to say that I mean it's a different perspective. But thank you. Good night.
Okay, thanks for calling. I don't know, the house analogy just upsets me because I've heard it so many times and it's so far from the truth that we've reached the point where we just shouldn't talk about that anymore because it's been talked to death and it doesn't hold up. It just does not hold up. You get into a telephone company system, you get into a credit reporting system, you wander around, you see all the files they're keeping on everybody. I'm sorry, that's not the same as walking into somebody's house. It's just not the same. TRW maybe is walking into our homes by grabbing all this data about us, by telling us and telling everybody else that has access to it what we buy, when we pay our bills, you know, what our particular tastes are, and judging us by that. That's an intrusion. That's an invasion of privacy, and that's something that, we need to speak out against a lot more. But it's hard to speak out against things like that if you don't have access to the information, if you don't know the information even exists. Remember, computer hackers were the first ones to find it. Good evening.
Hi, I have some quick things to tell you.
Oh, you weren't here last week, now were you?
No, I was just listening last week. I ran out of tape, that's why I didn't, but now I have a tape.
You ran out of tape? You can only talk if you have tape?
No, I just like to. Well, that's besides the point. Why do some Colcots collect the quarter on intercepted calls, such as recordings, and some Colcots don't? In other words, if you get a wrong number, like the number you have reached, you sometimes on a call, some Colcot phones, they'll collect the money, and some Colcot phones, you'll get the money back.
Well, it's because some are better than others. Some are able to detect when a call is actually picked up, and some simply wait for, say, time and use that as an indication.
Well, how do they know that it's intercepted, meaning a call that's...
Well,
those
tones are supposed to...
On
some particular machines, they mean something. You know, they hear those particular tones, and they say, oh, intercept recording, do not charge. And it's a good way to get around getting charged for things sometimes, too, if you train all your friends to pick up and say that every time they pick up the phone. But it's not a very accurate way of getting around those charges.
So in other words, they listen for special tones?
Some do. Some do. I would not say it's a very reliable way of detecting billing.
How does your telephone know whether those tones are on or not? They just know whether a call is intercepted no matter what.
Well, New York Telephone, it's their network after all. So,
or AT&T.
They don't have much of a problem with deciding when a call is answered or not answered.
And believe it or not, you could spoof AT&T when you're in a hotel. When you can make a long-distance call and just dial AT&T. When she asks you your room number, you could just give it somebody else's room number.
When the operator... Okay, you're inside a hotel.
Yeah, you may want to make a long-distance call. Instead of dialing direct, you dial 0 for AT&T, or 00, and you say, I'd like to make this call, and she'll say, okay, what's your hotel room number? And then I could just say the next room number, or something like that.
I can't believe that still works.
That still works.
I can't believe they don't have any other way of verifying. They just depend on your honesty there.
Do you know why there's no 900 information, 1-900 information?
Because it's being restructured for an exciting network architecture change. That's all I know.
It said, look for new 900 information in 1992. That was last year, whatever. Maybe the late.
It does say that, huh?
Yeah, it does say that.
I don't think... you don't have three-way, do you?
No, I don't.
Okay, because I don't think we can access 900 anything,
Let me just recommend a book.
I can try that,
book
I guess.
People want to know about digital switches.
Uh-huh.
It's called Fundamentals of Digital Switching, and I don't know who the author is, but it's in local libraries. And also, is there going to be a 2600 meeting on January 1st?
Yeah, I'm very happy you mentioned that because we do have an announcement as far as that goes. I know a couple of weeks ago.
And now, the last thing.
Are you going to let me answer the question?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, because it's January 1st, the first Friday of the month, that coincides with New Year's Day, And as a result, a lot of things will be closed. So throughout the nation, all 2,600 meetings are going to be held the following Friday, which is January 8th. So we're just going to pretend that the second Friday is actually the first Friday.
Okay. And now I just want to say that if anybody wants to make free phone calls, go into any chemical bank, look for the gray phone with the sign that says service line. It's sitting right in front of the service representative.
Now, I don't think this is a service a chemical bank offers, though, is it?
Well, I mean, it's not, but it's... There's a gray phone with a sign on it saying service line. It's right by the phone, right by the service representative. The service representative could be doing something else. They don't know that you're making free phone calls. They think you're calling service
line. So are you saying that any chemical bank has this same flaw?
Every chemical bank has the same gray desk telephone.
Mm-hmm.
And you can make all the free phone calls you want.
You mean you just...
I mean within reason, of course.
You just dial.
Right.
And they just let you do this.
Right.
That's incredible. Well, yeah, they are a bank. You know, I once got that reply from somebody when I...
Bank, I do messenger when I told work and them, I make all my phone calls from Chemical Bank.
Uh-huh.
Or manufacturers Hanover. They're the same thing.
Okay.
I made long-distance calls and everything.
I don't think you need to tell everybody listening what it is exactly that you've done, but thanks for sharing it with us.
All right.
Okay.
Holidays to everybody.
Okay, take care.
Bye.
We don't recommend that people go to banks and make free phone calls unless it specifically says in your particular bank statement that that's one of the privileges of your account. All right, we're going to try to call 900 information. I don't think this is going to work. Okay, we got a dial tone. We have managed to get that far. Now, 900 information doesn't cost anything, but I think we still block it here. Let's see what happens.
Architecture change. The 900 directory assistance number has been disconnected. There is no further information available at this time. Due to a network architecture change, the 900 directory assistance number has been disconnected. There is no further information available at this time.
Well, you heard it yourself. That's all we can tell you. We don't know anything else. This is what they've been saying now for a couple of years. It's a network architecture change, and apparently involves dismantling the whole thing. So it used to be that you would call 900 information, and they would list every single 900 number that there was extremely quickly, all the sex lines and everything, and I guess they just can't do that anymore. So they're going to try and figure out something else. Whether they charge or not charge, I don't know. 212-279-3400. Good evening. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead.
Turning off my radio.
Okay.
That's the first thing you can get someone to do. Someone should invent a special radio phone-in telephone that automatically receives radio and then shuts off when the phone gets picked up.
That's a good idea. Sort of a combination radio phone and...
You can have a built-in demon dialer for people who are really determined to break through. Sometimes I suspect you've got people online who are doing that every week.
Yeah.
I suppose the big question is, what is the federal government doing to ensure that all their top secret installations are not having auto dialers by chimney sweeps breaking into their system security? Anyway, regarding last week, I tried the 660 for getting my phone to call back. I'm in Brooklyn, and you have to dial the entire 7 digits of the number, not the last 4 of the exchange.
Okay.
Also, to the person who was complaining about no longer being able to get free phone books outside the New York City area, I guess if you're a New York City resident, I managed to do that, but I did it by accident. I called up and said, hi, I just need all of the phone books for the 5 boroughs, all of the white and yellow pages that you've got. And a few weeks later, I got 3 cartons of phone books. I got 39 volumes for the entire 9X area, as near as I can figure. I don't know what would have happened if I'd asked for it.
Wow.
On the other hand, I did this from a government office, and they may have just been bending over backwards to be obliging.
Well, did they know you were in a government office?
I think so, yeah. I think I gave the agency name for the billable number that they... they want to know what your main phone number is so that they can not bill it to you, but they need to know that anyway.
Uh-huh. See, I asked for several copies of my white pages, and I wound up with 2 copies of the white pages and 9 copies of the yellow pages, which I have no use for whatsoever. I don't know why they bothered sending that. Do you notice the phone books are different this year?
I haven't. With the business in the back, that makes me crazy.
Yeah, if you're looking for something, you have to know, first of all, if it's a business or a person, and then if it's a business, you go to the back of the book, and all the names, too. They only print the name once, and then they print everybody else's first name as if they're all part of the same family.
Right. Well, they've been doing that in other parts of the country. It really depends on where you are. So I have seen that before. But I don't tend to categorize things. I still hate the Yellow Pages with this business-to-business nonsense. Half the time I'm calling companies which are wholesale and retail, and I don't particularly know where they've decided to spend their money for advertising.
I don't think I've ever asked to see the business-to-business Yellow Pages as opposed to the other kind. You know, it's just I grab the first thing that's around.
Right. Well, when you order the whole set from them, you get that also. And, you know, the whole thing was bogus. Well, it got too big, and we needed to split into two volumes. And that's very easy. You go A through M and N through Z.
Right.
But they wanted to be able to charge people twice to have them list in both places. At least that was my assumption.
Yellow Page ads are extremely expensive, too.
I'm not surprised. But I assume they don't charge you if you have a business and you just have a regular listing and they stick you in the back of the book.
For a business line, you have to have a listing in the Yellow Pages. This is how they explained it to me once. You absolutely have to be in the Yellow Pages. Whether or not you have a display ad is up to you, but you do have to pay this monthly fee, which is exorbitant.
Well, and then in that case, you lie to them and you don't tell them you have a business phone, I assume, because I certainly know a lot of businesses who do not list themselves in the Yellow Pages.
Uh-huh.
And I also know, you know, people who, restaurants especially, just use payphones to do their business on, especially those horrible ones that look like big, swollen desk set phones.
Yeah.
Those are really horrible. They're very popular with the Chinese restaurants, I've noticed.
And, you know, they're popular throughout the world in Chinese restaurants. I saw some of those in Amsterdam.
Ah, that I didn't notice.
But only at Chinese restaurants. I don't know why this is.
Well, I assume it's the same way that all the Korean salad bars all have exactly the same brands of certain things in them, that there's some kind of distributorship, the mechanisms of which we know nothing, that ensures that they will all carry this brand of mustard and that brand of soy milk, and if they open a restaurant, you get this phone.
It's a whole world of activity that we know nothing about, I guess.
Right. Did you ever talk about the phones in New Zealand? I've never heard you talk about that, and I would just be a little curious if you know anything about them and their history.
I know nothing about phones in New Zealand.
Neither do I, except for the one time in my life when I was passing through and I tried to make a phone call and realized after about the third number, the digit I had dialed, the reason I was having so much trouble is because the rotary dial goes the wrong way.
Does it?
Yes.
Just like the water spirals in a different direction.
Yes, well, I went around Australia saying, gee, the sun rises in the west here, right? And I would grin, and they wouldn't find it at all funny. But when I got to New Zealand, the phone did go the wrong way. And I wasn't there long enough to see if anyone had an explanation for it.
Well, I guess I can sort of let this out of the bag because, you know, we don't usually talk about what's coming out in the next issue of 2600. But in this issue coming up, the winter issue, there will be a picture of a phone from a Scandinavian country. And if you look at the push buttons, you'll find that they go in a different order.
Are they calculator order?
I guess they're calculator order. I never really thought of it that way, but that's probably the way they thought of it. And
my understanding was that phones and calculators were intentionally not done the same way.
Here they weren't, but there, for some reason, that the same philosophy did not hold.
Okay, that's neat.
So yeah, so if you're ever over there, you can really get very confused pretty quickly. Dial all kinds of strange people.
Right. All right. Thanks a lot.
Okay.
I'll have to send you some money and get a subscription.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Our number is 212-279-3400. Good evening.
Hello.
Hi.
This is Off the Hook.
That's what it is, and you're on the air.
Oh. Hi. Okay. Listen, first off, I wanted to make sure the 2600 meeting is going to be on January 8th.
January 8th, not the 1st, yes.
All right. Second of all, last week somebody was asking about the video phone and about the rate at which the pictures were sent.
Okay.
And I want to mention, I'm not certain about this, but I'm pretty sure it's a slow scan, so that they send like one image either every 30 seconds or when you press the button, and they send it in a burst.
I think it's faster than that.
Really?
Because they have those other phones that send them every 30 seconds. They've been around for some time. Mm-hmm. But at least judging from the ads I've seen, it looks like kind of a jerky motion. And that would tell me, like, maybe one a second or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe two a second.
All right.
Not enough to really have video imaging, but certainly enough to get the point across.
All right. Aside from that, you were talking earlier about these telemarketing machines.
Yeah.
Yeah, as far as that goes, my philosophy on that, I don't really see how they could be made illegal. And still, because, I mean, then live telemarketers can still call, and that's just as much of an intrusion.
Well, you know what I don't see? I don't see how they can make a profit off these things. They say that they've gotten customer response because of it, and everybody I know that gets a call from one of these things absolutely hates it.
Yeah.
So I don't quite, but then again, you know, these free vacations, quote unquote, that you get on little postcards, they seem to be doing quite well too. 900 numbers seem to be working. So I don't know. Maybe people are just stupid or something. Maybe they like to be ripped off.
You know, what I found particularly disturbing was the machine that calls you, and then you pick up and you listen to it, and it says, if you want to get this such and such entertainment thing, just wait on the line, and you'll be switched over directly. You don't have to say anything, press any tones. You'll be switched over automatically and be charged. Now, what I want to know is what happens if your answering machine picks up on one of those?
Exactly. That's a very good question, and that's something that we've raised before. It's another ripoff.
Okay.
You know, they make enough of a profit off the amount of times that happens, and people don't even know what's going on, you know, to really get ahead in a very unscrupulous way.
Yes, indeed. Now, let me ask you, are you familiar with New York telephone pay phones?
Yeah, I've seen them around, yeah.
Okay. Now, I was wondering about this. Now, I know this, as far as not anything about the tones with dialing and whatnot. I'm talking about the tones going back the other way over the toll network for coin collect.
Right.
Right, and there's the tone, which is the same tone as the MF2.
Two, yes.
Right. Now, I know, you know, I heard that before, and I still hear it when somebody calls me from a payphone. I hear it at the end after they hang up.
Right.
Now, what I tried doing was I tried sending the tone over to collect a coin.
Which end were you on?
I was on the receiving end.
Okay.
Yeah, they called me from a payphone.
Okay.
And I sent an MF to 900 milliseconds duration.
Uh-huh.
Nothing happened.
Nothing happened. Well, I'm not surprised. You know, people have tried that before, and it doesn't work most of the time.
Hmm.
I mean, I guess the phone company is just one step ahead as far as that goes. It would be great if you could do that. It would be great if you could make the phone swallow the money of whoever's calling you.
Yeah.
Or give it back, even.
Yes.
But there are occasions where that works, but only in fairly primitive areas, from what I understand. I've never seen it work myself.
Why is that?
Why is it only primitive areas?
Why is it that it no longer works? Do they use, like, some type of DC signaling along with it or something?
I don't have an answer for that.
Because the other thing I was thinking, also, there used to, in the old documentation, there was mentioned an operator release tone.
Yeah.
Which was KP. Which was sent first, and I tried that option also, and that didn't seem to work. Is there a possibility that maybe it just has to be really, really loud enough that you can't simulate it?
Well, it does. You know, loudness is something that you definitely have to obtain. You know, if you don't get something loud enough, obviously it's not going to work. So make sure that the volume is there. You know, and then if it doesn't work after that, then you can be pretty sure that it's, you know, that there's something else, you know, happening here.
The reason I was asking about that is because I noticed that on one payphone that did not mute the tones as it was supposed to, it was really loud.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas the tones sent you know all the way over the toll network were really dim.
Were the tones loud in your ear at the payphone, or were they loud you know over the network, or could you even tell?
I'm talking about the payphone that was supposed to mute it and it didn't.
Okay.
And it was really loud.
Yeah.
Whereas the tones sent from home to the other payphone were actually were very soft, received very soft, not muted at all, and also didn't collect.
Okay.
Perhaps somebody might do a little research, and I might find something on this in 2600, maybe.
It's a good possibility that you'll find something there at some point.
Okay. So I'll be there January 8th.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
So long.
Happy holidays.
Okay, Fiber, any comments?
Is this on?
Well, you gotta talk into it.
Oh, okay, sorry. Yeah, KP is coin return, and like he said, MF2 is coin collect. But the reason why when he plays it nothing happens is very simple, and that's that the tones are signaled from the automatic coin toll system, ACTS, and simply he's not in it, he's in his house. It's this subsystem of what used to be TSPS and what is now OSPS, the toll network, operator service position system. ACTS is a subsystem of that and signals to the payphone, and the payphone also signals back to ACTS when you insert coins for a toll call.
Now, are they using a separate line to do the signaling, separate than the voice line?
Yep. It's the way the call is routed over the toll network. The payphone is routed through the CO to a position on the operator service position system network, And through there, the tallying up of coins and signaling and all that stuff is handled.
Right, but a red box will work, though, and that's sending to ACTS as well.
Right, that's because you're originating the call from a payphone. In order to originate a call from a payphone over the toll network, you're going through ACTS.
I see.
But if I was to call someone and they're sitting in their house and they decided to play back a couple of tones, they're in their house. They're not originating these tones from the network.
So how does the payphone know where the tone is coming from? What tells it?
It's a good question.
Mm-hmm. So if you could somehow convince that payphone that the tone was coming from ACTS instead of from the guy's house,
yeah,
it just might return the coin or it just might collect the coin.
It's possible that in conjunction with that there's some DC line signaling. Because originally that's all they used was DC line signaling. And on the lines that do not use the 1700 and 2200 hertz for nickel, dime, and quarter, on payphones that don't do that, they use strict DC signaling between the payphone and the central office. So it's very possible that with the coin collected and coin return tones that they're accompanied by some sort of DC signaling. Because usually right after the tone is played, the coin relay is manipulated to either drop the coin into the out of the hopper and into the coin collect box or out the coin slot. So it most likely is some sort of stimulus with DC signaling, which would probably be either a reversal of voltage or a doubling of the battery feed.
Fascinating. The wonderful world of payphones. Okay, 212-279-3400. Thanks, Fiber Optic, for that analysis. And let's go back to the phones. Good evening. Whoops. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hi, good evening. How are you?
I'm fine. What's on your mind?
Okay, how practical is it to use internet to send email overseas, and how do I go about getting a unique internet user ID?
Well, as of now, I still don't really know a system in New York. I'd like to know a system in New York that allows internet access, but I have yet to hear from certain systems like that. Do you know of one, Fiber?
Thanks. Yeah, I have an account on a system that offers a full internet access. For you can connect to them. They're called PANIX, Public Access Unix. And I can give you... If you have a pen. They're both in 212-877-4854 is the voice number. And the modem number is 787-3100. And you can connect at 2400 BPS. And there's a sign-up information along with the price. The price is separate depending on whether you want internet access or just access to Unix, but it's a very realistic price, and it's a very good service. I myself have an account on it, and the name of the sysops are Alexis Rosen and Jim Baumbach, and they'll be able to answer any questions that you'd have. But they're the only system I know of, for a fact, in all of New York City that actually offers access to the internet.
All right, so hopefully we'll hear more from them in the future. As far as the reliability of sending mail overseas, you really can't beat the internet, I don't think. It takes a little bit of training to figure out how to make certain commands work, but it's simple. Don't be put off by that. It really is simple. Once you know what to type and once you learn the format of addresses and things like that, anybody can do it.
All you need to know is someone's address, and it makes absolutely no difference whether they're on Mars or whether they're next door. If they're on the internet, all you need is the address.
It's like they're right there on the same computer almost.
Yeah, you know, those addresses are confusing because they seem kind of long. I mean, is there an order?
They are long, but once you realize what each segment of it means, the first segment is the username, then you have the machine name, then you have what kind of hookup it is to the network, whether it's educational or a company of some sort, and then you have, if at all, you have the country that it's in. United States, they don't put the country, so you don't have that part. It seems long when you add all that together, but then a phone number is long too. You know, if you just look at a phone number for the first time without knowing what it is, and you put a country code in front of it and all that kind of thing, it can be intimidating.
Also, the syntax for that name is standard. That's not something people make up. I mean,
no,
there's a certain order to how it's name
fairly
structure.
Standard, yeah.
It's standard. Name, computer, country.
Don't forget that at symbol.
Yeah. Don't forget the at symbol. You can really mess things up quite a bit if you get it wrong. If you get a single letter wrong, it'll go somewhere else or not go anyplace at all. But once you get used to that, you'll be amazed at what you can do. You know, instantaneously send something to somebody. I mean, I've had correspondences with people improve when they got on the internet, you know, better than face-to-face communications in many, many occasions, because you're able to compose, you know, letters and include things.
And send them files.
And it's instant.
But is there a way to register my name and my address so that no one else can use it?
Well, nobody else is going to have your particular username on the machine that you're using. Somebody else might have that username on another machine, but that's not you. That's on another machine. So you will be guaranteed to be the only person with that unique address.
Oh, I see. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, the internet is definitely gaining in popularity, and I hope to see it really swell up in the next couple of years. Good evening.
Yes, good evening. Hi. Just earlier you mentioned the encryption program, PGP. I first heard about this in Mondo 2000. Where can I obtain a copy, and what is the story, briefly, about it, the government trying to suppress this?
Well, do you have internet access?
Yeah.
Okay, there's several FTP sites. I don't have them at the top of my head. Do you, Fiber?
I don't recall off the top of my head. I think that you might be able to pick it up on a site in Berkeley. If you FTP'd to, I think, soda.berkeley.edu.
Okay.
Then log in anonymous.
Yeah, log in anonymous. Uh-huh. And password is, you know, your email address.
The most recent version is 2.1.
Yeah, I have an old version, version 1, so I was looking for the new one.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's not compatible.
It's completely off of FidoNet. Matter of fact, people on FidoNet are arguing about whether they want to let people use it or not.
Well, look, this is my advice to you. You do it anyway, and if the people of FidoNet can't handle that, then don't use FidoNet anymore. They have no right to be telling people how to send messages, because the only reason, think about it, the only reason somebody would object to you using encryption would be if they want to read your mail. It's the only reason. That's why the government is objecting to it, because they want to be able to see what people are doing. That's why system operators of some sorts don't like it, because they want to see what people are doing. But I think we've got the right to privacy. I think we should expect the same privacy as when we send a piece of mail through the real U.S. mail service. And we don't want somebody opening it up and reading it. You know?
So are you saying that the government is involved with, like, the copyright stuff that goes on with PGP? I know that in his copyright of the program, or in his information for the program, the software author mentions that he does not have the copyright for the algorithm that's used to run it, RSA or whatever. And so basically he's saying, if you live in the United States, it's illegal to use this software, wink.
Well, I guess I could sum it up basically, and that's whenever you encrypt a message with PGP, pretty good privacy. It encrypts the message with a public encryption algorithm known as IDEA, IDEA. And the key for the IDEA encryption is then encrypted with RSA, and that's what you trade with people. Because
okay.
It would take much too long to encrypt an entire message on an average PC with RSA, because it's a fairly slow algorithm.
But technically, that would still make it, quote-unquote, illegal to use.
Yeah, technically, because the fact that the key to decrypt your message, the key itself is encrypted with RSA, that RSA is pretty much an algorithm that's been copyrighted by the three authors, Rivest, Shamir, and Edelman.
Does anybody else see the absurdity in copywriting an algorithm?
Well, I was thinking of copywriting 2 plus 2 myself.
No, I already did. I already went down there and I did it earlier. Or copywriting the alphabet. Can you imagine if somebody got around to doing that?
Well, you know, this is people are copywriting the genetic code right now, so hey.
Wow.
Well, thanks a lot.
Okay, good luck. Yeah, you know, that's what annoys me when people say hackers have no regard for privacy. I mean, for God's sake, you know, we're trying to show people that you can protect yourself, you can protect your data. You know, I mean, I know people, lots of people actually, that routinely are harassed by system operators because they don't like or they don't understand something that is in their particular directory on a system. And you have to wonder, what are they doing searching for things? Why are they reading people's mail? Why are they looking at people's files? Why are they, you know, worried about this kind of thing? If something happens to your system, you investigate it. But if somebody is using a computer system, they have a right to privacy. They have the right to get their mail and communicate with people and not have somebody looking over their shoulders. And that's really all we're after. But it's not that simple. And the biggest irony of all this is that hackers are able to manipulate the system and get around in it. And for some reason, we are looked upon as the ones that are invading people's privacy when we're simply wandering around the machine that's wide open in the first place. Good evening.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
It's Off the Hook?
Yes, it is. You're on the air.
I'd like to know if somebody told me that there's a phone system that you could call.
Yeah, you better turn on your radio. That's probably what's confusing you.
Yeah.
Okay. As a phone system, you can call. Yes.
You could use it to, like, if you're calling a radio station to win a contest, you could use it to work as 13 different phones calling. Is there such a system?
Work as 13 different phones. I know that people have figured out a way to get around the number that's given out over the air and get past that particular point and get to a real number and have an advantage that way. Sounds like what you're referring to, though, is a way of dialing 13 numbers at the same time?
Yeah, kind of.
I don't know of such a system. I mean, it's certainly possible.
If you have 13 phones.
Yeah, you need to have somehow access to 13 phones.
There's 13 no one phone hook up to something that could...
I guess it would be kind of an interesting service to offer. You call, say, a 900 number, and then you tell the 900 number, okay, call this number 13 times at the same time. And if the person with the 900 number has 13 lines, they could do that and charge you a hefty fee for it, and you just might get through. I don't know how they would be able to separate all those 13 lines. Sounds to me like it would be a horrible mishmash of noise, especially if more than one of them got through. But I'm sure entrepreneurs are thinking about that right now.
Also, do you know where they sell pocket tone dialers with 33 memories?
Well, Radio Shack was selling them last I checked. Although so many people are modifying those to become red boxes that they might be under pressure not to. Just like with their pen registers, the FBI pressured them to stop selling those. So anything's possible. If they stop selling them, somebody else will, I guarantee it.
Okay, thanks for that.
Okay, thanks for calling. We have time for one more call. Yeah, one more call. Good evening.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Oh, hi. This is Soro. Hello?
What?
Am I on?
Yes.
Okay. Regarding PGP, I hear people talking about, asking about PGP and what it was based on. PGP was based on an encryption algorithm that a group of three scientists came up with, and their initials are R, S, and A, so it's known as the RSA algorithm. It was developed with taxpayers' money in MIT, but MIT sub-licensed it to a California company called Public Key Partners. And that company has been refusing to allow people to use the algorithm on their own. So one reason that has to do with that is that it's kind of hard to break it, so the government likes to have usually a backdoor to any algorithm before they make it available to the general public.
Uh-huh.
Also, that they were licensing to companies that were paying hefty fees for this. So when the person who developed PEP initially made it available for free, the government saw that people were going to have public key cryptography available quite too easily. So they even promised him several times that they will work out a way to license PEP so that people could use it for free. But eventually, it became they threatened him with a lawsuit, and he handed the work over to people from the Netherlands and some other countries. So PEP, there's a legal trick on how to get PEP from the United States. If anyone gives it to you in the United States, it is illegal. However, if you take it out of the country, it is also illegal. So once they developed it in Holland, what they do is they have it available there, and since there are all the FTP sites have mirror sites, if, say, Berkeley, as Fiber mentioned, if Berkeley has a mirror of the Netherlands, then it gets into the United States in some form of legal way.
Do you have that address in the Netherlands?
No, I mean, the mirror site means that an FTP site doesn't have a hard drive. Say, Berkeley, they have their own hard drive, but they also have a connection to another FTP machine. So they are working, that machine is working as both. Okay. So I don't know if I'm being quite clear because I'm trying to...
Yeah, unfortunately, though, we're out of time, but you brought up some very good points. Actually, I can think there are two sites. I know there's one in Finland and there's one in Italy that... that do offer PGP, and I'll tell you what, if people on the internet need to know those addresses, they can email us over at 2600. I'll give the internet address. It's 2600@well.sf.ca.us, as in San Francisco, California, United States. That's 2600@well.sf.ca.us, and ask for the FTP sites for PGP. And if you don't know what that means, don't ask, because we're not going to give you a whole big explanation. But if you know about that PGP program and FTP and you want to get it from another site overseas, we have the addresses, we just don't have them here, so we'll contact you with that. Okay, that's about it for us here tonight. Off the Hook will be back again next week at 10 o'clock on Wednesday night. Stay tuned for a rebroadcast of the evening's news. This is WBAI, New York. Good night. I cut myself while shaving. Now I can't make a call. I couldn't get much worse. But if they could, they would. Oh, they live on for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood. But they live no.
As U.S. Marines spread throughout the Somalian countryside from their bases in Mogadishu and Baidoa, questions emerge ever more sharply. What is their mission? Who ordered them there and under whose command? Just why was the pre-Marine United Nations deployment a failure? And why did the U.N. accept Washington's conditions for sending its own troops? Will the U.S. Marines confront Somali gunmen and forcibly disarm them? Why are the Marines being greeted with cheers? And what happens when the cheering stops? Hear daily special reports on WBAI's Somalia Watch with Samori Marksman, Barbara Nimri Aziz, Jim Dingman, Dallas Galvin, Paul DiRienzo, Laura Flanders, and myself, Phyllis Bennis, every night, 6:45, after the news. Somalia Watch, WBAI 99.5 FM, New York.
Haitian refugees will spend the Christmas holidays at the Guantanamo Naval Base in Cuba. One refugee, Célie Success, was allowed to leave Guantanamo only to be transferred to an INS prison in Manhattan, where she remains incarcerated. Join in a candlelight vigil and demonstration for her freedom and for all those at Guantanamo Thursday, December 24th, that's Christmas Eve, beginning at 4:30 p.m. at the INS Detention Facility, 201 Varick Street, one block south of Houston. Take the 109 train to Houston stop. Please bring candles. Contact 212-781-5157. That's 212-781-5157.
Good evening. In the news tonight, AIDS, drug abuse, and tuberculosis are posing a triple whammy to the nation's health. The Hamas Party, who are they? How did they get so powerful, and how do they fit into the big picture? Are major advertising companies shortchanging minorities in their ads? And in New York, the city bids a fond farewell to Mother Hale, who died last week. With these and other stories, I'm Laura Seidel with Verna Avery Brown in Washington, and this is the news for Wednesday, December 23, 1992. First, to Don Rush with these headline stories.
The first American official was killed in Operation Restore Hope in Somalia. He was a civilian who worked for the U.S. Army. In addition, three State Department security officers were also injured. The incident took place when a vehicle hit a mine in the southern Somali town of Bardera. State Department spokesman Richard Boucher.
The team was in the process of conducting a security survey of the area related to the upcoming arrivals of military and diplomatic personnel in Bardera. The wounded were transported to the USS Tripoli by helicopter for medical treatment. All three are currently described as being in stable condition.
U.S. military officials in Somalia said they thought the area had been cleaned of all mines. A second one was found, but the officials added they did not know if these were old mines or newly laid. The U.S. said it did not expect the incident would have any effect on future operations. There are more reported deaths in the Israeli-occupied territories as tension grows over the fate of over 400 Palestinian deportees now languishing in Lebanon. All of this comes as a suggestion is raised in the Israeli cabinet that the government should begin talks with a Palestine Liberation Organization. With a roundup of events, Daoud Kutab has this report from East Jerusalem.
Palestinian demonstrators clashed with Israeli troops, resulting in the death of two Palestinians and the injury of tens. As the fate of the 415 expelled Palestinians continued to be unknown, Israeli politicians seem to be searching for a way out. Leftist cabinet members are pushing the government to open direct dialogue with the PLO in order to offset the strong stand against the militant Muslims. Others are suggesting that Israel might be willing to return the expelled Palestinians if the Islamic Hezbollah party in Lebanon would be willing to allow the release of an Israeli navigator captured during the Lebanon War. In addition to pressure from the world community and the United Nations, the European Economic Community has suggested that they will not extend preferential economic treatment to Israel if the expelled Palestinians are not returned. A special envoy of the UN Secretary General is due to arrive in Israel in a couple of days. Domestically, pressure is beginning to mount as well. The Peace Now movement has called for a public rally Saturday night in Tel Aviv to protest the expulsions. For Pacifica Radio, this is Daoud Kutab reporting from East Jerusalem.
In Detroit, a judge has ordered three white police officers to stand trial on the fatal beating of a black motorist. Charges against a fourth officer, who is African-American, were dismissed. Jerome Lee has more from Detroit.
Judge Alex Allen ruled that there was enough evidence to bind over officers Larry Nevers and Walter Budson on charges of second-degree murder. Officer Robert Lesnow will be tried for assault with intent to commit great bodily harm. Judge Allen threw out a charge of involuntary manslaughter against Sergeant Freddie Douglas, saying that the prosecution did not show how Douglas's actions directly led to Green's death. Outside the courtroom, Douglas was relieved and said that his faith kept him going.
I never gave up faith, and like I say, my pen says it all. God is able. I have the utmost confidence in God.
Douglas still faces a misdemeanor charge of neglect of duty. The arraignment of Budson, Nevers, and Lesnow will take place in late January. For Pacifica, this is Jerome Lee in Detroit.
Finally, gray wolves in Alaska got a break from authorities. Wildlife and conservation groups got them to back away from a wolf kill. Doug Letch has more in this report.
Alaska Fish and Game Commissioner Kyle Rozier announced that his department will suspend all aerial wolf shooting in the state this winter. The announcement comes as a result of pressure from animal rights activists in Alaska and the nation to stop the state from killing 300 gray wolves by helicopter. In response to the announcement, animal rights groups have backed off on their calls for tourist boycotts to Alaska. It was those threats that earlier this month prompted Governor Walter Hickel to call for a wolf summit in Fairbanks next month to discuss the controversial plan, which the Fish and Game Department said is necessary to maintain proper levels of moose and caribou. The summit is still scheduled as planned. In McGrath, Alaska, Doug Letch, Pacifica Radio News.
Those are the headlines. I'm Don Rush.
And now to Verna Avery Brown in Washington.
Staggering statistics about the impact of the AIDS virus were underscored recently in a Washington Post editorial. Former Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare Joseph Califano Jr. points out that one out of every 100 men in the U.S. is HIV positive. One out of every 800 women is affected with the virus. AIDS, along with drug abuse and a steady rise in a new resistant strain of tuberculosis, is teaming up to pose a triple threat to the nation's health. Califano calls it a three-headed dog from hell. During a recent interview with Pacifica, Califano points out needle sharing is only part of the problem.
Well, I think we have to realize that when the conventional culprit for AIDS transmission is needles, and when you think about substance abuse and drugs, but far more ominous, if it gets less attention, is the fact that teenagers particularly who get high on beer or booze or pot or coke are more inclined to have sexual intercourse, and they're more inclined to have sexual intercourse without condoms. And that is a tremendous transmitter of AIDS and other sexually transmitted diseases.
But we're citing, or you're citing statistics in your editorial that say one out of every 100 men in the U.S. is HIV infected. That's not just teenagers, though, is it?
No, that's not just teenagers. And I mentioned, you know, the problem, what we have, in my judgment, with the combination of AIDS, substance abuse, and tuberculosis, is the most dangerous public health crisis this nation has faced in its history, and we're not addressing it. People with AIDS, because of their weakened, or people who are HIV positive, because of their weakened immune system, are more difficult to diagnose for tuberculosis. People who are homeless are likely to be on drugs or likely to be abusing alcohol. They are much more vulnerable to AIDS and to tuberculosis. Adult men and adult women who drink or who use pot or who get high on coke are just as likely as teenagers to have sexual relations more casually and without any condoms, and therefore much more likely to transmit AIDS or HIV.
Now, you've painted a pretty grim, grave picture of the public health landscape with your editorial, A Three-Headed Dog from Hell, The American Cerebus. Is it your feeling that people just aren't getting it when it comes to this AIDS epidemic?
It's not just AIDS. It's TB is a killer, too. Drug abuse is a killer, too. I think what people are not getting is the fact that the AIDS epidemic and substance abuse have really fueled the rise of TB in American cities. And we now have a situation in which by the end of next year we're gonna spend $10 billion treating people who are diagnosed HIV. We spend this year at least $300 billion in this country because of substance abuse. And now tuberculosis comes in. It's a killer disease. It's far more contagious than AIDS. You can get TB by sitting next to somebody in a classroom or in a movie theater, and you can't get AIDS that way. We have a real three-headed killer loose in this country, and we're not focused on it. And if we don't, we're going to pay a fearful price. 8 or 9 years ago, the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta asked Congress and the administration for about $35 million because TB was beginning to sprout up in American cities. They didn't get that money. This year in the United States of America, we will spend more than $500 million treating people with TB. Now, we better face up to the problem we have, or we're going to have thousands and thousands of people dying not just of AIDS, but of tuberculosis as well, and of drug abuse.
Well, I'm glad you added drug abuse. It sounds like this is a case of that old dog, drug abuse, chickens coming home to roost. That's a problem that's long been ignored by the establishment. But it also sounds like the problem may perhaps be so far out of control that drastic measures are going to be the only way to get a handle on the epidemic before it wipes out half the planet.
No, I don't think. I mean, I think we have a terrible TB problem, and I think we have, it's been rising very rapidly in New York City. The health department found 22% of the teenagers in poor areas of three of the boroughs, Manhattan, Queens, and Brooklyn, were infected with the TB germ. We have higher rates of TB in our poorest communities in this country than we have in sub-Saharan Africa. And that says a terrible thing about the United States. Substance abuse, alcohol abuse and drug abuse and abuse of legal pills is, to my mind, the top public health threat we have in this country. I include in that, of course, nicotine addiction. That's the number one public health problem we have. When you combine that with AIDS and tuberculosis and the way substance abuse feeds AIDS and tuberculosis in this country, you have a major, major public health crisis. I mean, you know, think about the fact we have at least about a million Americans who use heroin. We have a couple of million that use cocaine regularly. We have a half a million people on crack. We have 18 million Americans who are hooked on alcohol. We have about 5.5 million Americans who get high on marijuana a couple of times a week. And we have another 11 million of our people who are abusing tranquilizers like Librium and Valium and other psychotropic drugs. Now, that's millions of people who put themselves and the rest of this population at risk.
Joseph Califano Jr. is chairperson of the Center on Addiction and Substance Abuse. He served as Secretary of Health, Education, and Welfare under the Carter administration from 1977 to 1979. A new research study at San Francisco General Hospital gets underway in a few days. It's the third trial of a procedure known as cell therapy, a method whereby the patient's own cells are used to fight AIDS-related tumors. The idea is to promote the healing of the body's immune system. A total of 20 people will be tested. Meanwhile, residents of the Castro District, a largely gay community in San Francisco, have adapted to the unique needs of people facing the day-to-day struggles of living with AIDS and HIV. A newly opened neighborhood pharmacy is stocked to the hilt with AZT and other AIDS medications. Computer modems and electronic pill dispensers have been installed to cut down on the length of time chronically ill patients will have to spend having prescriptions filled. Correspondent Lisa Godoldig reports from the AIDS-friendly pharmacy.
You won't find cigarettes, alcohol, or greeting cards at the Castro Village Pharmacy in San Francisco's Castro District. The wall behind the counter of the country's first HIV specialty pharmacy is lined with a large supply of AZT and other AIDS medications. An electronic pill dispenser, a computerized hookup to the top AIDS doctors in town, and a modem connected to insurance companies. It's all designed to cut down on the hours typically spent waiting for a prescription to be filled. The drugstore opened 1 month ago in San Francisco's largely gay neighborhood. It intends to serve its clients, who are often fatigued from HIV or AIDS, quickly and inexpensively.
If you're sitting with your physician and she writes you a script and wants to send it in to us, we can have it, process you, and have it ready, and you're still sitting with her.